Blog Talk Radio.
Technology winded up doing, especially I'm talking about the technology winded up separating the generations. That's what they did. So why is this important? It's just important that Muslims understand the way that the technology worked and the way that the technology advanced from what was going on in the pioneer generation to what's going on in the social media generation. We call it the social media generation because the advancements that happened in the social media generation winded up attracting the children. And winded up attracting the children in a sometimes positive way and a negative way. Bismillah, man, rahim, assalamu alaikum, and welcome to the show. My name is William Kareem, and this is the Upload Live. Today we have a special guest who happens to be my son, Cavell Iguan. He is one who the Creator has blessed to be not only a positive Muslim energy in my family and a much more talented person than his father, but also he is raising his own powerful children and my grandchildren. And he also works in the Department of Education and one who works to educate our children and in a positive and constructive way. So please, ladies and gentlemen, welcome our Muslim brother, Cavell Iguan. Assalamu alaikum, Bell. Welcome to the show.
Welcome, assalam. What's going on, Pop? Appreciate being on the show. Thank you for bringing me on. I appreciate everyone out here. Hopefully, you know, I can bring something to the table that'll help us, you know, guide the mission that you on for such a long time, which is, you know, helping the community and pushing information out there that's helpful in terms of identifying information that can, again, push us forward in the mission that we always been on.
Alhamdulillah. You know, the experience, I want to really talk about one of the experiences that you had, that you and your brother had this summer. You know, when I was a young man working in the, I'm living in Harlem, we had a community organization called the West Harlem Community Organization run by Miss McNeil. And she had, you know, she organized a program where myself, and one of my best friends named Coop, we was able to take some children with John Smith and others up to Plattsburgh, New York, and, you know, just live out in the natural environment. You know, it was a really great experience, not only for me, but also for the children, too. But now, this is without the internet, but this is like, you know, something like the 1970s. It was like in the 1970s. So I know that you and your brother, y'all had that experience also in taking some children from the various environments and bringing them into the natural environment. How did the participants react to being in a natural environment without being able to participate in the Upload Life without their phones or computers?
So the experience you're talking about was one that we had with the Boy Club of New York this summer. And we went up to a campground that is actually owned by Boys Club upstate New York. The name leaves my mind right at the moment, but we were on 72 acres of land. And it was an incredible experience just to get on to the property. So as we were moving on to the property, phone signals were dying. Right. So that became immediately apparent as we got closer to where we would be for the remainder of the summer. And we were there for 2 weeks stint. So the young men who came up were without that service for 2 weeks, and it was a mandatory thing that was actually agreed to by the parents prior to them leaving the city. So it was understood that they wouldn't have their technology And again, it was an incredible space to get away from that. Again, 72 acres of wonderful land, and they couldn't have the equipment at all.
So how did they react to actually, you know, coming from a urban environment and being in the natural environment? How did they react to that?
Well, there was of course, there was moments where they were seeking some type of stimulation from electronics. We did have a movie night every night so that they were able to watch television, Netflix. We had Netflix and a couple of other streaming services. So they weren't without electronics, but personally, they weren't able to call their parents or text anyone or jump on YouTube or anything like that. And so I think there was a shock initially, but they understood because the application mentioned that that would happen, they knew that there wouldn't be any phone access. So with that, there was much more communication between the young people and ourselves. There was also an opportunity to play, which sometimes is an issue in our neighborhoods, especially with the technology, move around. And again, we had a lot of land. There was basketball courts. We had two basketball courts. There was archery as well. There was a wide space for, and a lot of space for hiking. So there was hiking being done. We had a massive lake there. So young people would go over by the lake, again, supervised. We also have water sports. So there were a number of things to have their attention, and that was the purpose, obviously, along with the kids' experience, being able to engulf them in the experience without any interruption and really focus them on some of the things that we wanted them to see, which was primarily the nature.
Yeah. So how did the parents respond or react, the Boys Club? How did everyone respond and react once the once this whole thing was over? Because you said that there were 2 weeks then, so the students would come up for 2 weeks, and y'all did that all summer. So y'all had what, 4 or 5 different groups that came up?
There were 3 different cohorts of young people who came up, and maybe 2 of them, there were return students, obviously, from the, I mean, it was an incredible experience, and I think a lot of them appreciated it, getting out of the city and doing something different. I think the parents obviously wanted their children to have a different kind of experience. A lot of the young men had grown up in the Boys Club, had experiences with the other young men who were counselors there, who we met with some incredible young men, Jose and Al, my young man Ray. You know, there were so many different,
right,
Lonnie, you know, who all stepped up, man, and really were big brothers to these young men. And I think that trust was another thing that made them comfortable in terms of not having the electronics, because again, it's quick communication with different kinds of people, you know, throwing information out there, instead of it going out to somebody that may be at home, it was going to the counselor, or it was going to the friend next to them, or they would talk to me, or they would talk to Mr. Blass, or they would talk to Mr. Caldwell, you know, who was the director up there. So it was a great experience, I think, without the technology, because it gave everybody a chance to socialize, talk, be intimate in a different way, which allowed for an exchange of information between younger and older people, and again, building camaraderie and friendship. It was a great moment.
Beautiful, very beautiful, man. I mean, the idea about being able to socialize, you know, without the technology, to be more intimate, you know, because socializing without technology is definitely a more intimate experience. So tell us about the Quick Hitters experience, because I know that, you know, like you are, this is an organization that you have created, working with your brother and others. Tell us about the Quick Hitters experience and how it's working out, especially working with, you know, other community organizations.
So the Quick Hitters experience was founded by myself, Cavell Jones, in 2014. The objective of the program of the company is to educate through entertainment. I created often one of the five components of hip hop. Then we go in and work with organizations. We worked with, as we spoke about, the Boys Club of New York. Previously, we worked with the GCI, which is the Jewish Community Coalition of Greater Coney Island, which is a massive organization as well. You know, their headquarters is in Israel, but they have all across the country. So, you know, we've been fortunate to work with some really great organizations. We're actually about to embark on the second term with a school with JCC, GCI, out in Coney Island, Richard Carson High School for Coastal Environmental Coastal Environmental Studies, where Mr. Blass, who is my brother, who I think was on the show last week, and another one of Brother Kareem's sons, is going to be out there creating a project with these young people from February to May. So we've been doing some great stuff. We're anticipating working with some people out in Far Rockaway with the Beacon Program, which again is another massive program here in the city. As my father mentioned before, I do work for the Department of Education, so I've been involved with youth education and social emotional development since the early 1990s, so I've got over 25 years in the business of dealing with young people, training that allow for us underneath the Quick Hitters Experience banner to really do some amazing stuff. And I want to make sure that I shout out Casey Haynes, who is one of my partners. He handles a lot of the booking and management stuff, dealing with organizations. He's also a business owner here in the greater New York area, and was a director for multiple years. That's why he joined the organization. He's a director for Spira, which is another CEO here in the city, which we've worked with, which has been around for over 70 years. Another organization we worked with where we actually met and started the idea of how we could get this together. This was about 2016, that I got with Quasi Haynes. From there, we got with Rashida Garcia, who is our academic and operations director, who puts together a lot of the academic pieces that we run, along with myself and the people we work with, like Mr. Blass and others. We brought in a B-boy, international B-boy. His name is Born. And we brought in an international graffiti artist. His name is Bizer, who is also going to be working with our young people out in Coney Island this year. So, you know, we're moving and we're doing a lot of things. We're continuing to grow. We're looking to start a nonprofit organization, the Quick Hitters Foundation, which we'll be doing some more things with the community this year, launching some initiatives. So there's a lot going on with us, and I've been very thankful for all the support from you and the radio show and the community, period. In terms of what True. We're doing. So, you know, thank you for the platform and being able to bring the message to everyone.
Alhamdulillah, we're really thankful, and we're thankful that the Creator of the heavens and the earth has bestowed His mercy on you and His blessings to allow you to grow and develop. And it's been an honor for me to watch your growth and development, yours and Bill's. But, you know, how, you know, like you've been guided into the education field and that you're doing all of these positive things for our youth. And it's a wonderful thing because, you know, like because you're telling me that it's not just, you're not just working with Muslims or just black youth. You're working with, you know, youth from many different parts of the world. Is that correct?
It is. The thing about hip-hop, which is wonderful, and you know, we're rooted in it because of you, you know, in case anybody doesn't know, which I'm sure everybody should know if they're listeners of this show, that, you know, they've said, you know, Brother Kareem, you know, is a founder member of the Propagators, and before that, you know, was a creative artist, Lance Mattis is his son, and, you know, brought us into that life of performing and also into the Islamic lifestyle. And it's been an incredible journey that he's taken us on, and it's led us into these areas. He's always been strong on education, pushed us to learn, pushed us to read, pushed us to be involved in our environment, and it has become a lifelong journey that has led us here. And I'm thankful that we're able to
be
thankful that we're able to work
so,
with these organizations.
So, from what I understand, you work with like, you know, people from Russia, Ukraine, China, you know, and you know, various other parts of the world. Is you know, how are these various communities accepting, you know, you and the Quick Hitters program?
Right, as I was mentioning, you know, because we've had that kind of life, those experiences were never restrictive, meaning we were exposed to different music, we were exposed to different cultures, we were purposely into different areas of the city to mingle and deal with other groups of people. And so in our business, we understand that there are people who are enjoying the culture of hip-hop all over the globe. And that is something that we want to address and be a part of, because the hip-hop culture continues to grow. The hip-hop genre continues to be influential all throughout the world. And just briefly, I saw a video yesterday where it was 1982, and there was a news program that was exploring how rap was being used in education. And this is the early 1980s. And I thought that was so amazing because, again, it has grown into this global phenomenon that continues to impact and cause other groups of people, including those who we've worked with out in Brooklyn, who were Korean, Eastern European, Ukrainian, Russian, Yugoslavian. We had people that were there from Egypt and Syria, young people who were of black origin here in America. We had Japanese. We had a Japanese child. We had a Chinese child. I mean, we really ran the gamut out there, and I think that this next go-round out at Rachel Carson with the Quick Hitters Experience is going to be even greater, because we're going to have a number of young people, literally between 10 and 25 young people in our classes twice a week for a four-month period, and it's going to be great to see what they come up with.
Well, let me ask you another question, because I think this is a question that our listeners would really like to know, especially, you know, like you have worked in schools with Muslim students who are Muslims in the public schools. What is the effect of, you know, how have you found that situation to be? You know, just give us some idea the way that you have found the situation to be with Muslim children going to the public schools in your own experience, what you have seen, you know, what you have observed, you know, what, you know, just give us some idea of, you know, how you think public education is really aiding and assisting, or what is it a positive? Can it be a positive for these Muslim students, or is there something that should be added? You know, what is your observations on that situation?
I think that there is, in the public school system, an acknowledgement of Muslim culture in multiple ways. Yet, inside of the building, there is a challenge in terms of addressing how Muslim children can maintain their Muslim lifestyles inside of a building. I think that's a challenge, but it's also a challenge that is in the home when parents who come from a particular, who come from a Muslim background or come here from a different country where it has been a Muslim society enter in and have to have their children in an American society where it is a different way, a different culture, a different feel. And I think the children are resilient, and the younger they come, they adjust better as time goes on. But I think it is a challenge. Once again, you have a lot of ideas that go counter to what a Muslim upbringing may have established as norms for young people. One particular thing that I will speak to is the dress, right, for young women. When young women have to wear their hijabs in school, it can become a talking point, but also a talking, right? Sometimes kids will approach and want to know more about it, right, and want to know why and ask questions and are just inquisitive and curious. But then there are other young people who may go over and yank their hijabs off or may make inappropriate comments just because it is clear through a woman's dress that she is Muslim. They'll make an inappropriate comment. And so, and I mean, you know, you're a terrorist or you're, you know, anti-American in some way. So, you know, we have these stories, these things that we that happen in the room because of the ignorance or curiosity of young people about Muslim children. But I think that on a positive side, the numbers are growing inside of the schools. And again, because there is a recognition of Muslim life and Muslim culture in the public schools, the public school system, the Department of Education has instituted holidays that coincide with Muslim holidays, Muslim cultures, Muslim tradition. And so young people are at least more acknowledged. We're more aware that when they're going through, for instance, Ramadan, and they need not be in the lunchroom, making accommodations so that they have an opportunity to go and possibly pray, if not in every school as a spoken thing, but each individual school making decisions to figure out how they can give children a room where they may be able to go pray, where they can, during Ramadan, go cohabitate while other kids are eating. These things, I think, are helpful in the process. There are also ELL classes, which allow for these young people who may speak a different language coming into the building to begin to learn English and have some connection with somebody who does speak their language, so interpretation is happening. So there are some things that are happening that are positive, but it's a continued journey between parents, the school system, and, of course, those communities working together to make it as comfortable and as feasible for these young people as possible to learn, grow, and become productive citizens, whether they choose to be here or in their own country.
Good information, very good information, especially for our listeners who may have children that are actually going to public schools, or maybe the idea of that socialization again. We go to socialization, and you know, it's just good to hear that the schools are aware of it, that the schools are aware of it. Yeah, go ahead.
Let me mention too. I wanted to mention too about the Black American Muslim community and how the Black American Muslim community assists in that transition for young people who are coming from other countries who are Muslim, whether that be from African countries or from particular Middle Eastern countries, right? The ability to have someone who's been here, understands the culture, and has lived being Muslim in America all their lives gives some confidence to the kids who come from other countries that there is a way to exist here and still maintain the traditions, culture, and respect for their own religion. So I think that the Black American Muslims are truly an important segment of people, and particularly what we're talking about with young people and being in schools, because to speak to something personal, my own son, your grandson, you know, he's in school with multiple young people who are Muslim, and he has garnered a certain respect and love for the religion that, though he has grown up in a home where the religion is exposed to him, having those friends, those people who are your age, who are your peers, who are engaged in the culture and have a positive connection to it, really has been a strong message and has been a great connector for them. So I think that also, again, the Black American Muslim experience and the young people who come from different countries with their Muslim upbringing connect well, and that is a great transitional group that helps move them forward in these school buildings.
Wow. Very good. Thank you. We really appreciate you taking the time and, you know, sharing with us your observations as far as being an artist, as far as being, you know, one who is working in education and one who is doing what he can do to, you know, uplift our children in the American experience. We really appreciate you taking the time. May Allah continue to bless you, son. Thank you so very much, man, for taking the time. I know you're busy because I've checked your schedule.
I'm busy, man. But listen, I'm never too.
Shout out to the Department of Education, man, for you know, also, man, for you know, allowing you to do this, man. Thank you, son.
Hey, listen, I appreciate it. Anytime being able to come on and support what you're doing with the community and share any experiences we have, you know, that's a wonderful thing. And I want to thank you for continuing to do what you're doing with the radio shows across platforms with American Muslims all across the state. Continue with your blessings, and may Allah be merciful as we move forward.
Thank you, son. Inshallah, speak with you too soon. Assalamu alaikum.
Alaikum assalam.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, you've been listening to, this is a segment of the Upload Life. You've been listening to Kaveli Kwan. You know, his microphone, I guess it was a little shaky, but I was listening, and I think it was he brought us a very powerful message. But I would also like to say that the message that he's bringing is very similar to the message of the Community-Wide Shura Conference, CWSC.us, whereas CWSC has traveled outside of its comfort zone of just being, you know, like the Muslim community, and started to affiliate themselves and get involved in you know, the positive works that are actually going on in the various communities around the world, around the country. And that is something that we should do. We should, you know, do more to get involved with the positive and constructive things that are actually going on within our community. And I'm not just talking about the Muslim community, because there's a lot of positive work that's going on from the governments, from the local governments, the state governments, and the federal government. There's a lot of positive stuff. A lot of times we don't hear about that on the news. We only hear of the negative things that are going on. But there's a lot of positive energy that's being produced in our local governments, our city governments, our state governments, and Community-Wide Shura Conference has been that example that I've experienced with Martha Nala Abdullah, the CEO of Community-Wide Shura Conference, and Dr. Aisha Kareem, and how they have been moving. Omar Shakir, Brother Omar Shakir, you know, another person that's on the board. Latifa Hameen, the director of American Muslim 360. You know, we have a lot of positive energies that are basically, you know, within the IWDM community, and we are reaching out. And you know, I've reached out to Kaveli Kwan, my son, because he's doing a lot of positive things. You know, he's really been blessed to get involved like that. And we wanted to share that. But the thing is that, you know, he's not just keeping it to himself and his art thing. Is that, you know, like he's working with other community organizations that want the experience of positive, you know, hip hop. You remember there are a lot of communities. There's a lot of communities that say that music is a rob. They say music is a rob, and we can deal with that. But I'm just saying that, you know, we don't feel like that. Imam W.D. Muhammad didn't feel like that. That music was around. You know, that, I mean, there's some music that you have to, you know, go ahead and, you know, let go of. But it's okay to be positive and instructive. I mean, the way that, you know, some of our Muslim brothers and sisters feel and you know, about music, you know, I mean, they have just canceled it 100% altogether in some of our Muslim cultures around the world. And then they use the justification of scholars. They say that these scholars have given them that this information, and then they try to connect Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam. They try to connect Prophet Muhammad to it. I mean, it is really something that is really deep, you know, and the thing is that they're continuing to promote this online in the upload line, that music is haram, music, and it's haram because. And they're giving all of these excuses why, you know, music is haram to that degree. I would really like to have a conversation with some of these people that are saying that, because we can go into the Quran, and we can show that that is not the case. That is not the case at all. And sometime in the future, inshallah, we will have an opportunity to address that. But let me just say this. We're halfway through the program, and we're going to do a PSA. But you have a question that you want to say or a comment, then we ask that you press one on your phone, and we would be more than happy to bring you to the queue so that you could share, you know, some of your observations or some of your questions regarding this. So we're going to play this PSA, and we'll be right back.
Join us live every Wednesday morning from 7 a.m. to 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time with host Naima Latif and yours truly, Imam Kareem Hamid, presenting The Female Solution. We look forward to your presence. Assalamu alaikum.
Okay. And here's another one. This is about Graceline.
Assalamu alaikum. This is Edward Willis, advisor at Graceline Community, asking you to join me in supporting community-wide Shura Conference and American Muslim 360. Make your tax-deductible contribution today at cwsc.us or phone in your pledge to 910-317-0297. Again, make your tax-deductible contribution today at cwsc.us or by phone at 910-317-0297. Together, we can remake the world. Thank you.
Assalamu alaikum. This is Sabrita Hadi, Director of the MCNRD Model Community National Resource Directory, reminding volunteers of our upcoming MCNRD Social Connect Conference every last Sunday of the month, 1 o'clock p.m. to 2 o'clock p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We look forward to your participation, so please check your email for conference call information. Thank you so kindly. Assalamu alaikum.
Yeah, wa alaikum assalam. Alhamdulillah, to be what I mean. Wow, that's what I wanted to see. I wanted to actually, what I wanted to do was, I just want you to hear some of this craziness that, well, this is hey man, I can't even play it. Well, there was something I really wanted to play, but I can't play that right now. I'm going to have to do that for you next week. Next week we'll start dealing with, you know, addressing some of these issues as far, especially as far as music is concerned. We'll do that. But in the meantime, what we're going to do, we have like 24 minutes left in the program. Now, I'm going to wait until the last minute before you start raising your hand and you want to say something. Again, you know, living in the upload life, it has everything to do with, you know, the advancement of technology. And look, you know, we have explained already, you know, the difference between the pioneer generation and the social media generation. And it can be, there's a lot of positive things that can go on as far as the social media generation, but there's a lot of negativity that's concerned also. And what we did today is we brought on Kaveli Kwan of Quick Hitters Experience, and who also works in the Department of Education, and, you know, some of the positive things that can actually go on as far as utilizing the upload life and how he's utilizing. But also, you know, I thought it was important to understand that, you know, you can get into the social media generation, but it's important to come back into the natural world. So participate in the social media generation, but come back into the natural world. That's what the Muslim has to do, because Al Quran is not a social media idea. It's a natural world. The Quran mentions everything in the natural world. So, and if that's what we follow, then, you know, that's what we have to go to. We have to go to the ideas that are presented in Al-Quran and not necessarily all these ideas that are presented in social media. And, I mean, they have all kinds of ideas that are in the social media. You know, I mean, they have these, you know, 10, 15-minute clips, 10, 15-second clips that will say something. And that's why I was saying, you know, these ideas about music being haram. It's a clip it's not that long. That clip is what? These are 2 minute clips. 2 minutes, 23-second clip, you know, talking about music makes me better. Really? Early generations of Muslims in music, repenting from music. Music shahada. So, you know, this is something where, you know, they're trying to get people not, when we're talking about this person is supposed to be a Muslim, and his idea is to get people to stop listening to music altogether. That's what his idea is. And I would really, really like to, I mean, I did what I could, you know, as far as, you know, sending him a text and things like that. Because when you're in the upload world, you know, you can make a comment. So, you know, like when he put out these things, and I made a comment and I told him, yeah, music, the way that you're explaining it is not haram. The way that you're explaining it, it's not haram. And if you'd like to discuss it, you know, then holler at your brother, you know, and we can talk about it. But that's not something that they want to do. See, because when you're in the upload life, what you do is you put your clip out there, and nobody can, you know, basically. You're not having a conversation. What you're doing is you're going ahead and making a statement, and then you leave it up there, and then people comment, well, yeah, I liked it, and then I don't like it. But, you know, the comment still stays up there. So is this something that we can use? Yeah, we can use this, you know, to be positive, to put more positive energy up there. But there's a lot of, like I said, there's a lot of negative energy. Just like if I was supposed to put something up, and I have done it before, I've talked about music, that music is not haram on Facebook. And the vitriol that I got back from it was just crazy. It was crazy. It was just crazy. But the thing is that, was I satisfied with that? No. Why? Because, you know, there are people that, because they got a lot of comments back, would say, oh, yeah, you know, it was successful what we did because we got a lot of comments back. But a lot of the comments that came back was negative. No, music is not haram. You know, you don't even know why I'm saying that music is haram. You don't, you're not saying, you don't understand that the word music is haram. I don't really want to get into it. I'm really good. But, you know, maybe we'll deal with that next week about, you know, the whole idea of music and what music is all around. 779-770. Assalamu alaikum. You're on the air. Your microphone is open. Who's calling? Where are you calling from?
Walaikum assalam. Speaking about social media, brother, this is Hashim Kamau from Rockford, Illinois. They had on the social media about a year ago saying that the Quran didn't address abortion. And I had to respond to that on several times. Allah said in the Quran that Audhu Bilimin Shaitan Rajim, do not kill your children. And several
right.
times in the Quran, Allah folks that just certain Muslims have talked about Quran doesn't address abortion. I said, wow, you're totally wrong. Now I quote the
right.
ayahs and surahs and everything. So you're right about
was
social media,
bro. Was there a Muslim that said that? Was there a Muslim
mean,
that said that?
Yeah.
Did a Muslim say, wow.
Yeah, Muslim said that. Quran doesn't quote something about abortion. And I had to respond to that. And I quoted the surahs and ayahs and everything. I said, Allah addresses abortion over and over again in the Quran. Don't kill your children. I said, wow, they don't know what you're supposed to be talking about. They don't know. They must be numbers trying to, I don't know what they be doing, brother, but they should be wrong.
Yeah, well, let's see, but, and that's it. You were able to actually quote from the Quran what the Quran was saying. And that's what's important. That's why it's important for us to know our book. That's why it's important for us to know it so that when they come up with these issues and these ideas, we can address it. So thank you so very much for that, brother. And keep up the good work, you know, of addressing that situation. We also have in the life of Prophet Muhammad, where, you know, like they were burying their girl children. We have that. So, you know, this whole idea about, you know, abort, that was the way that they were aborting girl children. They were burying them. They were burying them. And, I mean, you know, anybody who's a Muslim should know that. And look, you could look at the film, The Message, and The Message makes that clear, where, you know, the woman says, yeah, you know, they told me to kill my children, you know, and I just couldn't do it. And she, as a matter of fact, this was in the film. You know, the woman says, I was lucky to be alive because they were going to kill me. And my father said, I couldn't do it. She said that I'm alive because my father had done it so many times that he couldn't do it again. He said he couldn't do it again. And I think that she wound up being one of the first martyrs of Islam as far as the reference as far as the film was concerned. You know, that whole idea about abortion is concerned is what, so you just change the name? You change the name from abortion to, you know, burying your children. And Allah says specifically, like the brother said, you know, do not kill your children for fear of want. As a matter of fact, you know, look, like I said, sometimes the internet or, you know, like the upload life can be very good. Just like right now, what I'm doing, do not kill your children fear of want. Holy Quran. Let's see what we have. Surah 17, verse 31. Surah 17, verse 31. Sali International said, interpretation, and do not kill your children for fear of poverty. We provide for them and for you. Indeed, their killing is ever a great sin. That's Sali International. Pickthall says, slay not your children, fearing of fear, a fall of, to poverty. We shall provide for them and for you. Lo, the slaying of them is great sin. Yusuf Ali interprets, Kill not your children for fear of want. We shall provide sustenance for them as well as for you. Verily, the killing of them is a great sin. So you get the general gist of it, that all of the interpretations in English, you know, basically wind up saying the same thing that the brother's talking about, killing them. And see, that's the way that, you know, we were able to utilize the technology, social media technology, by me being on the computer and the brother saying that, then I can go straight to Google and I can put in, I think I put in, kill not your children for fear of want. Yeah, do not kill your children for fear of want, Holy Quran. And boom, it came right up. So this is one of the positive things that happened as far as the use of social media technology, of the technology. And believe me, the technology is going to even advance even further than this. I mean, this is just the idea of where it's at in 2022 going into 2023. But wait until we get into 2025. I mean, you know, it's what will we see as far as technology in 2023, 2024, 2025? The technology is definitely going to advance. But with all the advancement of the technology, the most important part for us to remember is that it's all right to participate in the upload life. It's all right for us to advance with the technology, but always put the technology down, come into the natural world, the real world, and deal with five times a day, make the world stop and bring to the bottom what's on top. Making sure that you look, you're not going to be able to pray in the social media. You pray in the natural world. So that's the thing to make sure that we teach our children, something that Mr. Cavelli Kwan, the Quick Hitters Experience, you know, that's what our special guest, that's what he was telling us, that the education system has to work on that. That when Ramadan comes around, that, you know, there should be a space for Muslim children who are not, you know, who are fasting during that time. There might be a place for them to go ahead and make prayer. I know when I was working, I just took 5 minutes to go on the side and make the prayer. And then come back. If the prayer came in and I was on the job, I said, well, listen, you know, I'm going to step off for a minute, you know, and I would take, you know, 5 minutes, you know, go ahead, make the prayer, and then come back to work. Now, there are some, I've read that there were some people, some Muslims who were working on jobs, and they took 15, 20, 25 minutes to make their prayer. Now, they might have been, you know, this might have been a strict thing as far as the way that they made their prayer to that degree, but, you know, and then what, it's supposed to be two or three times a day? You taking 25 minutes, man, to go ahead and make your prayers, and that's an hour a day. And all of these people got fired. And they got fired, and they was like, oh, we got fired because, you know, we making prayer. You got fired because you took, I didn't hire you. I didn't hire you, and I got to pay you, you know, while you go ahead and take 25 minutes to make your prayer. It don't take no 25 minutes to make prayer. Four rakats? To make wudu and make your, and go ahead, man, and do four rakats and take 25 minutes? Really? What, you, look, I'm not going to even guess. Now, there are, and I'm not saying that there aren't some rituals that Muslim countries have, that they have that kind of, and there are individuals that have that kind of experience, whereas they take 25 minutes to make their prayer. Because, you know, like, they're gonna make wudu, and then after they make wudu, they're going to make the intentional prayer, and then they're going to make the prayer, and then after they make the prayer, then they got to make du'as, and you know, they got to make du'as. So it could take 25 minutes. I'm not saying that that there are not times where, you know, you can make a prayer up to 25 minutes. You can. But while you're working? And then you expect the man to pay you for that. So all these people that were doing that, they got fired. And you know, and their whole thing was, oh, we got fired because we would take your time to make the prayer. You know, we got fired because we were making prayer. You know, they were discriminating against us. Really? We can't take advantage of people to that degree. If we're going to participate with people, we're going to participate with city, state, federal government. If we're going to participate with people who are not Muslim, you know, we have to be, what do we call it? We can't take advantage of other people. That can be a problem for us as we move forward. So we can't, it's going to be important that, you know, once you step out your zone and you want to step into, just like, what do you tell your children when you go to school, in this prayer time, what do you tell them? Take 25 minutes, go ahead and make your wudu, and after you make your wudu, you do this, and then you make the prayer, and then after you make the prayer, you make your du'as, and that's what you tell your children, so that they take 25 minutes, while they're supposed to be being educated. It don't take that long to make the prayer. The idea of making prayer is to make the world stop and give praise and glorification to the creator of the heavens and the earth. We've been taught how to do that. If it's Dhuhr, it's four rakat. If it's Asr, it's four rakats. They don't say, after you do it, you're supposed to make du'as and, ask for the blessings for your family and, ask for the blessings of the people that you're working with and, ask for the blessings from those who have gone before you and ask for blessings for the country that you live in, now I'm satisfied that I've made du'as for everybody, and so now the prayer is complete. That's not what the prayer says. The prayer is when Dhuhr comes in, it's four rakats. That's what it is. And, you want to say, you do a short du'a, fine. But, extended du'as is not part of the prayer. It could be part of your prayer, but while you're working, that could cause you a problem. That could cause you a problem. Now, some people, they'd be all right, Their job will say, he's taking 25 minutes to go ahead and make the it's okay, it's fine. Well, he's going to take 25 minutes to go ahead and make answer the prayer, she's going to be, it's okay, it's fine. But if somebody, if your employer decides, look, you're taking too long, I don't mind you going ahead and taking a couple of minutes, taking 5 minutes or something to make your prayer, but that's just that's a little much. 779-770, assalamu alaikum. You're on the air. Go ahead, bro.
Wa alaikum assalam. This is Hashim again. When I was working, in the public arena, I always stayed in wudu. And so when I always looked around where was a nice place to pray, I always took my break or my lunchtime to observe my working area. And I always saw a place to pray, but I was always in wudu. I didn't have to go do wudu. My hand was dirty. I go wash my hand and find a place to pray. It doesn't take long to pray at all. Should always be in wudu anyway.
Right.
Anyway, that's what I want to say.
Good point. Well, Ibn Islam, thank you for that, Brother Hashim. That's very interesting that, and there are some people that do that, that stay in wudu. They stay in wudu. I'm not one of those people that stay in wudu. I haven't elevated to that point yet, in my experience where, I stay in wudu. But that's a very good, that's a very good habit. To stay in wudu, that's a very good habit. And we were told that Bilal, that's a famous one, that Bilal, stayed in wudu, and Prophet Muhammad said that he saw Bilal, in heaven before he was there. He got there. He said, what did you do? He said, I stayed in wudu. Bilal said, I stayed in wudu. So that's a very beautiful thing. I have 5 minutes left in the program, and I thank you so very much to shout out to American Muslim 360. Listen online at am360.org and 24-hour live streaming at 701-719-4197. Live audience call in to the studio at 515-605-9891 or 425-292-4253. Email us at info@cwfc.us. Tweet at CWSHURA, S-H-U-R-A-A. Like us on Facebook, Community-Wide SHURA Conference. Visit AM360 Parent Corporation Community-Wide SHURA Conference at cwfc.us or leave a listener comment at 910-317-0297. You're listening to American Muslim 360, the number one Islamic radio station in the nation where your intellect is respected and your voice is protected. And at 10 o'clock, you know, I will be back on A New Day for Our Islam Community Radio. And the telephone number is 515-605-9891 with the program Reviving the Quran and Sunnah with Imam Ibn Yaqub Islam, Imam Shakur Ibrahim, and others. The community-wise, this New Day for Our Islam Community Radio program comes on 5 days a week from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. at 515-605-9891. This is more Muslim programming, and we're working with American Muslim 360 and IWDN Radio and other medias that we can find a way that we can create 24-hour streaming of Muslim media. That's what we are working on, you know, because that's what we need. We need 24-hour Muslim streaming so that, you know, you, the listening audience, can have a place where your intellect is respected and your voice is protected. And so this is William Kareem. I'll be back with you tomorrow with the Lives of the Prophets with Jumana Kareem. We'll read from the book, the Lives of the Prophet. We were on, I think we're still on Adam. But, you know, it's been powerful. You know, last week we was talking about how Adam's sons, Cain and Abel, you know, how they made a sacrifice. They made a sacrifice. I don't know. I guess you would call it a sacrifice. That one had a sacrifice of livestock, and the other one had a sacrifice of grain. And one of the sacrifices was accepted, and the other wasn't accepted. And the reasons for that, you know. So I would encourage you to, you know, go back in the catalog and listen to that show. It was a great show. And inshallah, you know, we're going to move forward with the Lives of the Prophets tomorrow morning. So with that, I thank you so very much for taking some time and listening. And now what we're going to do, we're going to go out with this promo for the first Sunday with Imam Omar Shakir. And until tomorrow or later on today, assalamu alaikum.
The peace be on you. Assalamu alaikum. My name is Omar Shakir, and I'm resident imam of Masjid Bilal Ibn Rabah in San Antonio, Texas. And I would like to invite you every first Sunday from 12 to 1:30 p.m. Eastern Time to join us for our class where we're dealing with the subject matter of the basics in Islam. We are excited about this program, even if we're new Muslims or Muslims have been in the faith for many, many years. It is a wonderful opportunity to learn and understand this beautiful way of life. We also connected with various insights from the tafsir of Imam Waliduddin Muhammad radiallahu anh, and we all explained its practical application. We look forward to being with you on every first Sunday of the month where we would deal with the basics of Islam. The peace be on you. Assalamu alaikum.